Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with wonderful guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing, where does multifamily value-add investing stand? And joining me today by phone is an incredibly talented multimedia journalist, Holly Dutton, the senior associate editor with Multihousing News, and Kayla Espinoza, vice president with Colliers International in the company's San Francisco office. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, Holly, you've been a guest on our show previously, and you always have such great articles that about multifamily and I read them because obviously it gives me ideas for episodes. And you wrote an article, I think, that was published on MHN back in early December of 2020, a little over a month ago. And it was where value add investing stands. And I thought it was a very intriguing article from the standpoint of obviously it was framed with the global health crisis we've been going through. Tell me a little bit about what caused you to look at that as a story idea.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, one of the things, and thinking about, there's so many things that the pandemic has affected in multifamily and real estate in general. And it's something that I feel like we hadn't talked about and hadn't seen a lot of talk about was how does the global health crisis affect value-add investing, which is, a big thing in multifamily. And I think as recent as 2018, value-add apartment sales totaled $32 billion in transaction volume in the U.S., which is a lot. And so I really kind of wanted to dig in and see how is this going to affect this strategy that is used a lot. And so that's kind of where it came from. I was just really curious, and I felt like that has to have some kind of big impact, at least in some markets that were harder hit than others. So that's really where it came from.
And even though we have a audience that is made up of people who work and are in the multifamily industry, I think it's important to define what value add means, what qualifies as value add. And Kayla, I mean, and I know with Colliers, when you're helping people to invest in properties in your part of the world over there on the West Coast, what qualifies as a value-add property?
Great question. So I think nationally, wherever you are, a property where you are going to make physical or managerial upgrades to improve your NOI would qualify as a value-add property. For example, a recent transaction we did, it was a property that was built in 1990, hadn't really had many renovations other than just modest cleanups or turns when people moved in and out of the property. So their amenities were slightly dated. The interiors were a little dated. It also been self-managed. That is a value-add property. A new investor would come in, renovate those common area spaces, likely renovate the interior of the units, put in new, more efficient management, and increase the NOI there.
Great. That's a great definition. Holly, let's kind of get a sense for where we stood prior to the pandemic and what was the market like. And Kayla, I want you to also chime in as far as what was like in your market specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
Holly, what did you find?
Like I said before, this is the most recent data I was finding was in 2018, value-add apartment sales were around $32 billion in terms of transaction volume in the country, which equates to about 16% of all multifamily deals, according to data from Real Capital Analytics. So definitely a very important piece of the multifamily pie. So things are going very well, and it was very popular in a lot of kind of the booming markets, the Sun Belt, the Southeast, pre-pandemic.
Yeah, and Kayla, what'd you find?
And I would tail off of that and just say, and especially in our market, and I think around the country, pre-pandemic, the value-add market was hot, hot, hot. The amount of capital that was flowing in for value-add properties was significant. The delta between renovated newer product and value-add product was narrowing greatly. We were getting multiple offers on value-add deals, so much so that many historically value-add focused investors were looking at new investment strategies because that segment of the market was becoming a little overheated.
Kayla, what do you think the attraction is for that type of activity versus building something new? What's the attraction? Is it the inventory?
Well, I think with value add, the attraction to value add is that you have an existing product that's already producing income for you. There's already an NOI there. And the tweaks and the renovations that you can do to increase your NOI significantly, are typically surface level or managerial. So it's not necessarily an easy strategy, but definitely much easier, especially in our market, than going through the entitlement process to build and develop new housing.
Yeah, and I know that when speaking with folks in the industry, one of the big challenges when they were building was finding reasonable land to build on in a location that made sense. And so obviously if you have existing inventory that's available, I think everybody wants to be able to, the one to go in and wave the magic wand and make it more profitable. At least that's the goal going into it. So Holly, when you were speaking with the folks you interviewed for the article, and I want to make sure that link the article on our website for this episode so that someone wants to go back and read it. It's a great read. But when you were interviewing everybody for the article, what did you find that what happened with value add after the shutdown?
Right. The big takeaway I got in speaking to people in the industry was that there was really a big pause in April where everybody kind of held back and kind of just watching things unfold, you know. It was really based on the uncertainty of the situation, which is still very uncertain in some ways, but especially then. And there was a lot of uncertainty about rents, which is a crucial part of the investment strategy. So that was the main takeaway was, in the immediate aftermath of kind of the lockdowns and onset of the pandemic, there was definitely a pause in deal activity, and things really slowed down around in April.
Yeah, and yeah. Kayla, what did you find in your market? What were you seeing as far as how investors were reacting to value add after the shutdown? Did you see the same pause?
Well, yeah, immediately after the shutdown, I think like the rest of us, most owners and most investors had no idea what to expect. The market pause, the closing down of transaction volume was the greatest uncertainty we'd seen in decades in real estate. So investors really didn't know what they were going to do in that scenario. I think what got them back in and back focused was the collection data, but that took several months to get that data back and see that, people were still paying their rent.
Yeah, I mean, that I remember immediately after it happened when I was interviewing folks in the industry, they were talking about, we really don't know what to expect. It's something that we're just going to have to learn as we go. And, I hope we're getting close to being on the other side of it. But obviously, the industry has continued to operate and continued to be successful. There was a lot of mixed messaging going on out there as far as not only probably in the investment segment, but also in the operational segment of making the properties operate, because nobody knew what the proper protocol was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gotten out of lockdowns for the most part, in most markets in the country. What type of return? We got about a minute left, and I'll throw this to you, Holly, just for a brief kind of teaser for the next segment. What are you seeing now, or what are people talking about now that we're starting to get on the other side?
I would again point to rent collections, which has still been pretty consistent. They've fallen a little bit, but and then I would also point to just a lot of the markets that were already strong before the pandemic, and have had less pain than other markets. There's still demand there. People are still moving, and you know, people I've spoken to are still kind of going forward with some of their renovation plans.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. We're gonna stop it here for this segment. We're gonna be back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of where does multifamily value-add investing stand? I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today by phone is a talented multimedia journalist, Holly Dutton, the Senior Associate Editor with Multi-Housing News, and Kayla Espinoza, Vice President with Colliers International in the company's San Francisco office. I do want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So, Holly, again, for listeners who are just tuning in right now, we are talking about really the content of an article that you wrote for Multi-Housing News that was appeared about a month ago. And there will be a link to the article in our website. But the article was titled, Where Value-Add Investing Stands. And we've covered some things within our first segment. But I'd like to ask you and also Kayla as well, what do you think has brought the investors back to the value-add strategy since the pandemic or since the lockdowns caused that initial pause?
Yeah. Like I mentioned before, you know, I think being able to really see some data on rent collection was really helpful in getting people back to the table. Some of the lockdowns, and you know, sometimes that fluctuates, but in a lot of places those have lifted a lot. Things have gotten more back to normal, And, you know, some, it depends on the market, too. There's some markets that are still just doing really well, and there's a lot of demand. And I think just the idea also that people always need somewhere to live, that always helps. You know, one person I spoke to works in the Charleston, South Carolina market said that just before the pandemic, in the first quarter of 2020, was the biggest ever for his team in terms of multifamily investment. You know, the second quarter is, of course, very slow. But then by the third quarter, it ticked up and was active or even more active than the previous year. So, and he attributed that to the, you know, the continuing popularity of the Sun Belt and historically cheap debt, among others.
Yeah, Taylor, what are you finding?
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely cheap debt, but also the metrics that we're seeing coming out of multifamily properties in not all locations, but specifically secondary, tertiary markets and Sun Belt on the West Coast, Salt Lake City, Phoenix, Reno. The low vacancy, high collection rates, that definitely is what's pulling in back in, into this space.
Yeah, and what type of activity did you start to see? Was it gradual, or was it all of a sudden? You know, people were jumping back in once they felt like they kind of had their feet on the ground. Once the uncertainty was a little bit, gone.
It was kind of a slow start, and then a quick pickup. And what we're seeing is specifically in the value-add space is that, you know, typically while renters and markets are looking for the best value, investors hesitate to add value. So the strategies have changed. They are looking at, doing a multiple level renovation strategy where they can offer multiple finish levels within the same community so they can attract a wider array of renters. So maybe they do a modest turn in one and a more high-end turn in another. So the strategy in value add has definitely changed and trended more towards modest renovations right now.
Holly, what did you find when talking to some folks from other parts of the country? As far as their strategy.
Yeah, I would agree with Kayla. I heard a lot of the similar things. One company I spoke with said they did have to tweak their strategy, particularly in the Las Vegas market where they had some properties, which has been hit hard by the pandemic, due to the fact that tourism and entertainment is such a huge part of the economy there. They were in the midst of upgrading, I believe it was a B-minus portfolio, and they were bringing it up to a B-plus level. The occupancy was high, so there was demand for renovated units, but they found that, you know, renters had become really price-sensitive, and they weren't willing to spend more for upgraded units, so they kind of decided to hold back on doing more renovations and push back their plans by 12 to 18 months. And that's something I heard from a few companies, kind of just pushing back their renovation plans, extending those timelines, you know, depending on the market conditions. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that company in their portfolio in South Florida, which had really felt little impact from the pandemic, they decided to continue on with their plans with no tweaks.
Yeah. And Kayla, I know that Las Vegas is in your neck of the woods over there on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And Holly mentioned it was significantly affected. Can you kind of define that a little bit as far as, what you were seeing?
Yeah, Las Vegas was significantly impacted. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that their jobs market and their industry is supported by tourism and casinos, which have felt the most impact in this pandemic of any segment in real estate. So that Las Vegas was more impacted than any other market, I think, in our West Coast area. Reno has a more diversified job market. They were closer to Silicon Valley, Northern California. So they have done pretty well and have been pretty resilient through this pandemic.
Yeah, and speaking of California, what were the California markets that were hit the hardest?
Absolutely, San Francisco, was hit incredibly hard. I think rents in San Francisco are down at this point about 30%. Vacancy is up 20 to 30%. The South Bay market, San Mateo area, was hit pretty hard. Los Angeles was hit hard, but renters aren't necessarily moving out of Los Angeles. They're just consolidating. So households are children are moving back in with their parents, or maybe families are moving in together. So it's been hit hard, but the migration out of San Francisco has been the most significant.
Yeah. I guess the question would be, you know, what's the other side of that coin, Holly, as far as what markets are the most attractive, for as far as value-add investing? What did you find when you were talking to your sources?
Right. Again, I'd say the ones that were doing well, most of the places that were doing well pre-pandemic still have, the Sun Belt, places like Austin, where it's anywhere where there's a lot of population growth that puts, upward pressure on rents. I think those are still going to be popular with value-add investors and have continued to do well. Like Kayla was saying, Austin has a pretty diversified economy, and a lot of these other cities do too. So I think, all the right fundamentals are still there. So I think that those will still be very attractive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kayla, in your market area, has there been any shining stars as far as markets that are really becoming more attractive?
Yeah, so I think the work from home trend has really benefited cities within an hour of job hubs. So the Wine Country, Fairfield, Vacaville area, Reno, Tahoe, those areas, Sacramento, have done very well. Also in areas that have larger units where tenants can get more space. We're all at home right now trying to find a kitchen table or a couch to work from, and maybe we have a partner or children running around, so space has become incredibly valuable. So markets that are still within, a driving distance from a job center, but are further out, less dense areas with units that are larger and have more space.
And I want to follow up to you, Kayla, with you mentioned the working remotely, and one of the things that we've seen, we've got about a minute left to answer this, but one of the trends that we've seen in the industry and when I've talked to people is the fact that because people can work remotely, they're, leaving the city centers and moving to suburbs or submarkets within their area that have less expensive rents. What is that doing to those value add properties, opportunities in those city centers?
Is that question for me?
Yes. Yes, I'm
okay,
sorry.
That's a good question. We don't have any clear answer on when tenants are going to start to return to urban cores. The work from home trend is clearly here to stay. I just saw yesterday Jefferies, a financial firm, put out an article saying that work from home is definitely here to stay for them. And when the financial institutions start to embrace the trend, it's probably one that's going to stick. There's still so much to attract people to urban cores, the community, the living environment for young people, the excitement of being in a city. So I think it will return, but when is hard to say.
Okay. All right. We are going to break it here. We'll be back with our next segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of where does multifamily value-add investing stand? I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today by phone is a very talented multimedia journalist, Holly Dutton, the senior associate editor with Multihousing News, and Kayla Espinoza, Vice President with Colliers International in the company's San Francisco office. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. PM Workforce, the leasing management company, consistently excellent. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties, and CTS, Complete Technology Solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. Again, for our listeners who are just tuning in, we are discussing this topic based on an article that Holly authored that appeared about a month ago in Multihousing News, entitled Where Value Add Investing Stands, and you'll be able to go to the episode page of our website at multifamilyradio.com to get a link to the article. I would certainly suggest reading it. But I want to ask you, Holly, in the investment strategy that we talked about previously, it requires a lot of demand. How has the demand changed due to the, or after, or during the, whatever phase we're in right now, of the global pandemic?
Sure. I think, overall, I think the demand has shifted somewhat in terms of, definitely in terms of city versus suburban, especially in, like, you know, some of the gateway cities that were hit hard, like New York City, San Francisco. They were also some of the most expensive. I think that has definitely shifted. We've seen a lot of that. We touched on that before. And then, I mean, it really depends on the market in terms of demand. You know, it can change, you know, city by city. But I think that I know there are a lot of people in the industry that are pretty confident that, you know, once the vaccines are really widely distributed and things go back to some kind of normal or new normal, the demand will still really be there for apartments, especially in, you know, talking again about the urban core. I think people will, like we said before, we don't know when, but I think people will still see the value of living in cities.
Yeah. Kayla, what kind of demand are you seeing, and where, and what's driving it?
Yeah, well, I think as we've mentioned, it's not a linear demand for apartments right now. It's not linear. So in markets like, for example, here in San Francisco, you look out the window, it's empty. People have been, during this pandemic, there's been an exodus out of San Francisco. The demand here is not what it has historically been. Where other markets, if you go into Boise, if you go into Salt Lake City, Scottsdale, Phoenix, Memphis, Austin, those markets have probably more demand right now than they can keep up with. So the demand in those markets is strong. Looking forward, you know, do we think San Francisco is you know, renters are going to come back? It's just about when. And then there's fewer renters today than there were a year ago. For example, a colleague of mine, a younger colleague of mine in our office, recently moved back in with her parents, and that is a trend that we are seeing with many young people. We're seeing households combining, you know, children moving back in with their parents, but also families moving in with each other. So there's just fewer renters out there right now than there were a year ago, but they'll come back. And a one-bedroom in San Francisco has dropped 30%, but it's still 50% higher than a comparable one-bedroom in Jacksonville. So people are out there. They're looking for value right now. The work-from-home trend has shifted where and how people live. So the demand is moving around right now.
Is the when we're talking about value, does, for instance, in the markets that there is less demand, does that create greater value opportunities for investors to be able to whereas before the pandemic they would have a hard time competing to get a property, or are the properties just not on the market?
Right now, they're not on the market. We hope to see some opportunities in some of these markets where demand is down, where vacancy is high, where renters are not flocking to. But at the moment, there's just not much volume, transaction volume, occurring in many of these core urban markets.
And as far as institutional investors, That have had specific hold strategies in mind when they were initially making the investments in properties, have they extended those hold periods because they want to wait to be able to get the best value for their property when they sell it?
Yeah, larger institutional firms have the opportunity and the option to sit down and redo their strategies and make sure that they're going to meet their internal IRR expectations on their properties, and they are definitely doing that. The smaller mom-and-pops, mid-market groups will likely still transact.
Yeah. Holly, I was going to ask you, where did you get, what was the general feeling from the sources you interviewed for this article as far as the future? Was anybody willing to go on record? I know, and Kayla's one of the people you interviewed, so she's on this call. But
I'm on record.
but the question is, was anybody willing to make a prediction and look in a crystal ball as far as timing and what to expect?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people kind of had kind of a measured response, and there's just so much uncertainty, and that's kind of, it's almost overused word now, but it's true. These were unprecedented times, and I think that they're still pretty, they're not going to abandon, the strategy or anything like that. I think they're optimistic that things will go back to normal, and they'll kind of get back to where they were. But in the short term, I think they do expect to, in certain markets, stretch out their timelines, just be a little more cautious. I spoke to one company, and they said they were really going to look to be even more meticulous about doing the research and with market data and kind of seeing how apartments are absorbed in markets. And they were going to be just, a little more cautious about that.
Kayla, I'm curious as to what your feelings are as far as what permanent changes and strategies as far as when it comes to value-added investing in multifamily will be. I know when speaking to people in the industry, going before the pandemic, one of the big issues was doing due diligence and being thorough in your due diligence. Well, nobody could have predicted the pandemic, so that's not part of, due diligence, but obviously it's caused people to start thinking about things. What types of things are people looking at when they're going to contemplate investing down the road as far as what do you think is here to stay?
Yeah, I think the biggest impact on multifamily in general and specifically in value add is the trend of work from home. How people live it seems like work from home is here to stay. How that manifests will be interesting to watch. And so how people live is going to start to change. We used to look at, especially in markets like San Francisco or in Silicon Valley, San Jose, those areas, we used to look at apartments as just a place where you went to sleep and your amenities were space around you. Now those homes aren't just where you sleep. Those homes are going to be where you sleep, where you work, where you potentially care for your children or an elderly parent. So how we live is going to be changing. So I think that's going to have the biggest impact on value add and on multifamily in general. So trends that we are likely to see are value add projects and opportunities that include things like business centers as amenity spaces or larger units, the trend towards two-bedroom versus one-bedroom or one-bedroom versus studio. So looking at how people live, I think, is going to be one of the biggest long-lasting trends that comes out of this.
All right, great. Well, we are going to break it here and come back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of where does multifamily investing stand? I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone is a talented multimedia journalist, Holly Dutton, the senior associate editor with Multi Housing News, and Kayla Espinoza, vice president with Colliers International in the company's San Francisco office. Before we jump back into the conversation, I do want to let our business supplier partners in the industry know that we have some very special Multifamily Matters sponsorship opportunities that have become available. If you're interested in finding out more, please reach out to us through our website at multifamilyradio.com. Holly, you know, in your article, there was some discussion about the fact that developing, you know, people who are developers of multifamily properties are, you know, pausing due to construction costs and material costs and that have really skyrocketed due to the pandemic. What were you able to find out about new developments and properties that were on the planning boards to be developed?
Right. Yeah, I mean, one of the big things that has been affecting the industry for some years is the rising cost of construction, which is just a big obstacle for new development. And a lot of, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. Regulatory compliance, there's tariffs, and then just the cost of labor has risen a lot. So, that's what I heard from a lot of people, and the materials that's been affected specifically by the pandemic. Some people are waiting it out, kind of holding back, waiting to see whether they think construction costs will go down in the future. So there's definitely some waiting there and some holding back in terms of new development.
And Kayla, that's a completely different animal than, you know, buying an existing inventory that's already out of the ground and generating money. When you develop a property, you know, you've got all the costs, the development cost as well as the construction cost, and then you have to go through a lease up period to be able to make it to where you can meet your goals, as your financial goals. What are you finding with people that were going gangbusters before the pandemic to where they are now?
Yeah, so we are seeing and we're anticipating that many of the forecasted projects that are in the development pipeline in the areas that I work in that haven't broken ground, haven't started construction, will likely not do that until the next cycle. On top of construction costs in California, you also have your entitlement period and hold period, CEQA period, which really adds quite a bit of capital to development and what it takes to develop a project in California. It could be a 10-year hold period before you get anything even developed. So many of the properties that were slated to be developed this year, you know, have been in the pipeline for many, many years, but we still think they're going to hold off because, as Holly mentioned, the cost of construction has not come down. If anything, it's gone up. So what penciled a year ago, what penciled 2 or 3 years ago, likely doesn't pencil today.
Wow. And obviously there are some differences in developing in the state of California than, for instance, where I'm headquartered in Texas. But, you know, still, you still have the same construction issues and development costs and so forth regarding, having to hold and put out a lot of money. And with the uncertainty ahead, I think there's going to be that pause for some time, unless people are at a point where they, you know, they're just really feeling good about the market they're in. So, Holly, let's talk a little bit about, and full disclosure for our listeners, we are taping this show in the first week of January of 2021. So we've got the whole year ahead of us. Let's talk a little bit about the outlook for this year, for 2021. What have you been hearing?
Well, a lot of things. There's still a lot of uncertainty, I think, from those in multifamily. But really, what I've heard, you know, I just recently spoke to Doug Bibby, the longtime president of the National Multifamily Housing Council, and and he's been in this industry for a long time. Obviously, last year was unlike any other year he's seen. But he's pretty optimistic, and he pointed to, you know, a few reasons why he feels still very strongly about multifamily. And one of those, which we kind of touched on, is demand. He was pointing to a lot of pent-up demand, and that once things get back to normal, you know, it's really going to, you know, get the market multifamily market really firing on all cylinders. Like we talked about before, you know, people consolidating households or moving back home. You know, once things get back to normal, there will be demand for apartments again. People, you know, will look to move out and go back to cities, hopefully, that everyone hopes. So I think there's, from what I've heard, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I think people are just hoping that, you know, things go back to normal sooner than later.
Yeah, and Kayla, we've talked to, you know, obviously we've been really kind of highlighting value add, but what are you seeing as far as the, what's the general feeling, the outlook in the markets you operate in as far as 2021?
Yeah, I think that we anticipate that the suburban, the less dense areas in California are going to continue to do well. The Reno market's going to continue to do well and continue to thrive. Urban core, San Francisco, San Jose, Los Angeles are going to, I think that predicting when those markets come back is a hard thing to do, but we do anticipate that they will come back and come back strong. I also think looking forward for 2021, a key factor in how well certain markets recover, specifically markets that I cover, will be federal intervention in the way of stimulus. We saw the second round of stimulus that's going to be helpful. And if, you know, looking down the line, probably more opportunities for stimulus money would be helpful for markets like San Francisco and even greater Bay Area and California.
Yeah, I think that's it's going to be interesting to see how the stimulus does affect markets across the country, and obviously the moratorium on the evictions when mm-hmm. that ends. What's going to happen with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you had any feedback from any of your sources on what's going on with the moratorium, Holly?
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on also the, you know, apartment class, the asset class, I think, mm-hmm. In terms with the eviction moratorium. I think, you know, that's an indicator of how something's going to be affected more. Generally, the Class A properties tend to do the best with rent collections. But I mean, in general, you know, the industry is not, you know, supportive of the eviction moratoriums, but they are very supportive of, you know, more rent relief measures, because that's, you know, what really a lot of people need. You know, if they're behind on rent or they have back rent, that's mm-hmm. going to be really key, like Kayla mentioned, and they've been very much pushing for that for months. You know, I've been continuously talking to people at the NAA and MHC, and they've been just pushing hard, you know. And the latest, you know, stimulus package had a $25 billion emergency rent relief fund, which they were very happy about. But, you know, there's been estimates that there's like $70 billion in back rent. So I think they're a little bit concerned for the long term with that. But otherwise, you know, I think that was a really, and the stimulus checks and the unemployment benefits, all that was included was a positive for the industry. But there's definitely some concern going forward. And again, it just, I think, you know, maybe we were talking about Class C apartment properties. Those are probably more impacted sure. in terms of rent collection. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes left. I want to ask, starting with you, Kayla, how did you get into the business? And tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and a little bit about Colliers.
Yeah, great. So I got into real estate and multifamily 20 years ago in 2000, so almost 21 years ago. And I jumped right in out of high school. I was working and going to school at the same time, and I come from a small town in California, and my options were real estate or doing hair, and I chose real estate, and very glad about that. And I have worked in different areas of multifamily throughout my career, and I've been with Colliers parent company and Colliers for about 11 years. I've been in brokerage for 6 years, And I work with the Colliers Bay Area Multifamily team. We have a great team, strong team, and I cover Northern California and Reno are my markets. We focus specifically on the mid-market area, $10 million to $100 million space. Last year, we did about $300 million in transactions. And, yeah, that's what I do. And so if you have any listeners out there that are interested in buying or selling in Northern California or Reno, I would love to hear from them.
How can they reach you?
They can reach me via email at Kalah, K-A-L-A-H dot Espinoza, E-S-P-I-N-O-Z-A, at Colliers.com, or you can find me on the Colliers website.
Fantastic. And Holly, you know, you've been doing your type of work in journalism for quite some time. Tell us a little bit about that and what you're working on now.
Yes, thank you. I've been in journalism for going on 12 years now, originally from the Houston area, and I've been living in New York for about 10 years. I work for Multi Housing News, as you know, and also our sister site, Commercial Property Executives. So I cover a lot of different real estate sectors. And I will say the in terms of what I'm working on right now, it doesn't really have to do with real estate, but my biggest thing I'm working on now is my first child, which is due in 3 weeks. So that's
congratulations. And thank you for making time to be on. I'm sure you got a lot on your plate.
Yeah. So that's kind of, usually I have a lot of projects in the works, thinking about starting a podcast, but like right now, three weeks. So that's kind of what's in my future.
All right.
Yeah. So we're really excited about that.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
If someone wants to reach out to you, how can they do it?
Sure. You can email me any tips, questions, anything. It's holly.dutton at cpe-nhn.com. I'm also on Twitter. It's just at Holly Dutton. If you want to reach out to me that way.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for being on. We are going to stop it here with this episode, and we will be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.